This is a University of Otago podcast.
I'm about halfway through rebinding the JavaScript and packing it as an external source. So it's all functional, but you might see a bit of event bubbling and things like that. But we'll see how we go. Okay, so the scenario is there's a research group called Technology. Jack is a staff member in the research group. Jill is a webmaster in the group. And the group has its own site, technology.otago.ac.nz. Yeah, go for the front row. Yep, for sure. There's seats in the front row, Nikki. Okay, so Jill needs to create the role staff and give that role the appropriate privileges for their site. And she also needs to add Jack to the role. Jack needs to edit a paragraph and save changes. Jill needs to stop Jack from editing any pages within the profiles section. So last week I was explaining the tiered self-organization. So the first tier in this scenario is me. I've given Jill the privileges as a webmaster of the site. So we're just starting at that level. Now we'll watch Jill and how she organizes from there down. So. Can I organise for Jill? Yes, I think I can. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Okay, so we'll log in. I've also got a more detailed answer for you about your applications question, so don't let me forget that one. So Jill's username is 111111, and we'll just put in her Otago password. Again, not remember. This is the very unglamorous user home. I was been reading the emails, and there's a lot of discussions about fees and things, and I was going to wow you all by putting together a page full of fees and just say, like, oh, look, I only did it in a few hours, but I got a terrible migraine last night and didn't get a chance. So what I'll do later on is just demonstrate how easy it is to pull together all different kind of fees into one site. But for now, this is the home page. Welcome, Jill. Your role is webmaster in the group Technology, and all other kind of mashups will be contained here relevant to Jill as a person and as a role. So she goes on to her web page. So web page looks exactly the same as it was when you're a visitor, except you've got this little icon bar down the bottom. So you've got home, ACL, and edit. So she's going to go into her ACL and go into settings. So the group is Technology, the domain is technology.otago.ac.nz, and the module, so applets are a module, is CMS, Content Management System. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead. First of all, what we'll do is in Technology, we'll make a role. So the role is staff, add, so we've got a staff member, so staff member for Technology. Then we'll add Jack as a staff, so just his name, username, and add, and you just keep on going on like that, so on and so forth, for as many staff names as you like. The next step is to enable CSV input, comma separated value, so you could just do an output from a database and then just input the file, and you could do a whole department in one click rather than one by one. Okay, so now, the key is the university username. Everything hinges around that. Yeah. So actually, and what you could do, if it once it gets integrated, I just today from 444 got the PHP script to interface with LDAP. So I'll get on and do that. Once I do that, you'll just have to put in the username, and it will tell the real name. So all you have to do is basically put in a list of usernames. System does the rest. Okay, so now we're here. We've got technology.otago.ac.nz, applet CMS, and we'll put in a series of privileges. Now, privileges, if you can remember last time, this is kind of the self-organizing bit. So I've built the CMS applet, and I've just tagged a whole bunch of things within that CMS as privileges. And I'll show you how to do that later on. So these are just tags that I've created. The first thing for any resource is the view tag. If the view tag isn't there, they're not going to have access to it. So we'll give, just to start off with, we'll just give Jack the ability to save and not do anything else. Because, you know, we're not too sure if he's ready to make his stuff go live. Okay, so that should be all I need to do to set up Jack. So Jack's a staff member, and he's got those privileges within the ACL CMS. Now also what we need to do, is okay, just restart there. Now this is a two-step process. I think I need to refine this and make it simpler, but this is the self-organizing bit. So this is me organizing myself within the framework. So there's a two-step. We've given Jack privileges within the ACL. Now what we need to do, now we're just in the technology site, as you can see up the top. The first thing we need to do is allow him to view the site. Then we give him a doc down the bottom. And we'll give him the applet CMS. And I think it's item home. Allow. Okay, so we'll log out. Now remember, this is only a webmaster doing this. So your normal user just goes in and this is basically your normal user going in now. This is, hopefully, fingers crossed, Jack. Welcome, Jack. Your role is staff in the group technology. Enter the technology site. Go in here. Everything looks the same, except you've got the edit down the bottom, which gave him privileges to the CMS. So he clicks edit here. Everything that's editable within the page becomes seen. You click on this, and you get the CMS interface. Now, as you can see here, all he can do is save, because that's the only privilege we've given Jack. So, and like any good technology website, it's full of Taoist quotes from a certain lecturer in Hong Kong. So we'll just, you know, put whatever in, add stuff to that, and click save. Now, as you can see, nothing else has actually changed on the site, because we don't want it to go live. This is the bottleneck part. This is the workflow management part, where only Jill comes in or whoever has privileges can come in and check.
How can Jack
preview
on the pages?
Preview, currently, right as it is now, he can't. What I was thinking with this is that in the home page you could have... what you could do is... I haven't actually configured it for this, but you can make the styles which are governing your web page also govern the CMS, which means that you can actually, this would be exactly the same in here as it would there. Yeah. So, but this is just kind of the first step. Yeah. But there's many ways. I mean, either you could pull in the CSS styles for here, or you could... Yep, okay, cool. I mean, you could construct a whole preview page if you wanted to. Okay, so we'll just log out. So that's Jack. He's gone in and he's done his business. Jill goes back in as a webmaster.
Has Jill somehow notified that the page has changed?
She would have, because when she originally created it, what she would have done is, when she goes in here, now Jill has full access to all the things within the CMS. So not only can she publish and save, she's got manage this content. Within manage this content, she's got options. Within options, she's got expires never, automatically put in the time and date, and it will just automatically disappear. manually time and date ends. They'll be emailed when it goes out. And also notify when saved, when published, and when expired. So you just put emails in there, and you can do, you know.
If that page expires, do any links to that work, do that resource expire as well?
It will just go offline. Any links within that paragraph will just obviously not be accessible.
I mean, links from other parts of the site to their page.
It's not the page, it's the paragraph within the page. This is where it's interfacing with Dreamweaver because, as I explained yesterday, we're coming into an environment where Dreamweaver is dominant, so it's keeping that in place and just adding a seamless layer on top of that. So the actual construction of the page in this scenario happens in Dreamweaver or any HTML editor. It doesn't have to be Dreamweaver. And the other option is view logs. So you've got here and you've got a full log of, you know, all the parts of this, who saved it, when, and you got click rollbacks. So we'll publish what Jack saved, and then we thought, ACF, that doesn't mean anything. Oh, we better go and roll back. So go click in here, manage contents, view logs, and go back to a previous, whatever previous entry you want. Rollback and it rollbacks to a previous entry, and that entry then gets logged again, so it forms a chronological archive of all editing. Okay, so that's the basic. That as a user, that's kind of the first. You know, that's the major. That's the thing that most people will be doing is just editing content through that. Now the actual CMS here is just TinyMCE, which is a very mature JavaScript. Applet, and these are just some basic things I put in, but you can put in anything, seriously anything, images or video or whatever. Here I've just put in, you can choose from special characters. I also need to optimize all of this. It's running slow, and but once it goes live, it will. That's incredibly slow. So you can put in any special character you want. Yeah, I mean, for all of this, you need to go and read the TinyMCE manuals, which is a whole community in itself. And people are developing their own little things just for those buttons up there. And so, yeah, it's a whole kind of world in itself. Okay, so that's the CMS. Yep. Yeah, in my opinion as well. Yep. And so, yeah, so basically I've just suck that out, and it's just the rest. I've just kind of packaged that through Ajax. Now, the nice thing about this is I'm going to show you. Let's keep in order. Okay, so we've created the role. Jack's edited. Jack needs to stop. Jill needs to stop Jack from editing any pages within the profiles section. Okay, so Jack has rights to edit everything on the website, but not the profiles. We don't want him to edit anything in there. So we'll log out. Go in as Jack. Yep, thank you. Yeah, I confuse myself so much with this thing. It's embarrassing. Okay. So we go in and... Oh, sorry. So we need to go and set Jack's ACL in through Jill. So log out, go in as Jill. The next applet I'm developing will be a quick user change, so I don't have to do this login, logout thing. So I'll just have a little icon down the bottom for developers, so you can test different users. So we've got staff. Now, I was talking about inheritable resources here. So the resource is, in this case, technology. So it inherits, everything underneath that will inherit from the technology rules. So what we can do here, a site's made up of folders and pages. So we can create a different set of rules for a particular folder or for a particular page. Now, the profile section, have I spelled that right? Profiles section is just a folder. So we'll click that, and now we've got the profiles section here, and we can edit different. So currently this is inheriting all the rules from this section. So this is the technology site, and this is the section underneath that. Now, so what do we want to do? We want to stop staff members from editing in the profile section. So app.cms deny, that should do it. Okay, so we'll log out. Log in as Jack 333333. Did I do an extra 3, did I? and I forgot the password. Okay, now, if I got my tags right, which I didn't. So we've got profiles. I was working before, it's a human error, I'm sure. Anyway, there's a lot to get. Should I go back and do you want me to go back and do it? Or? Okay. Yeah, it was working. I'll probably. Oh, look. Did I? So. Right. Well, again, it seems pretty complicated, right? You're setting all these rules for all this for this access and stuff. But the thing you need to remember is when you're doing this, you're doing it for a role, and that role could be 100 people or something like that. So you're really only doing it once. And what this allows you to do with the writing this in, it allows you to construct your own logic. So. And again, this is kind of the raw version. So later on, you could have automated buttons. That's actually quite easy to do, and that's probably what I should do, is just, you know, get some automated things that you pull in. Anyway, there's okay. Okay, I'll try it one more time, and then we'll move on. So that's on that page. Okay. Well, I'll have to get back to you on that one. Okay, so two, the next stage, the branch. Jill needs to create a new page. Jill needs to tag some content as a privilege. Jill needs to add an editable area. Now, in Dreamweaver, so we create a new page. So what we've done here is there's a Dreamweaver template, and we've just, so go in here, select your templates, and a new page from there. And this is just your normal Dreamweaver. So we'll call it new page .phtml. And in here, we'll put blah, 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 save that, and then when we go to our sites, new page, so blah, 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 there's our new page. Now, just so we want to make this a privilege, so we select, just say those two blahs, we don't want just the normal public to see, so we select that and we click up here, which is our ACL lock, our privilege. So you click that and you just create your own privilege tag. So we'll call it whatever you want. So call it new tag. new tag. Save that, and then when we log out. No, basically it's just wrapping it in a PHP tag, and I've just made it convenient in Dreamweaver. At this stage, I haven't developed that, but you could. Yeah, yeah. I mean, where I'm seeing this going is that you could have full editing through CMS, but right now it's just basic paragraph editing. Okay, so we go in here, index, new page, and you go see, and you can't see the blah, blah. And then basically what you do is just as I've shown through the ACL, you go in, you write in your new tag, decide who can see it, when and where. And probably what happened before is that I might have had, I don't know, I'll get back to you on that, what happened before. Yeah, yep, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, that's right, yeah. And now the next concept to introduce here is deep tagging. So the idea is here, this one tag that we've created here, we've called it new tag. So that's just creating, that's just tagging this. But you can make it tag not only the view content, but also the controller content and the database content, which means that through one That one principle, that one tag, is not only controlling how a program is presented, but actually the whole mechanism underneath it, which is a really good security feature, because that's what often the problem is with security, is you have like security steps in JavaScript or the view level, and it's very, very simple to manipulate anything that's on a page, so you need to protect all the way down. This is made very simple. And a good way to demonstrate that is if we have a look at the download size of this, so this is 47 kilobytes when you go in as a normal user. When you go in as Jill, if you have a look at the size of the download. This is very bloated. I need to pack all the JavaScript and stuff to reduce it. We see it's 414 kilobytes, so what's the extra downloads? It's JavaScripts and Ajax manipulations and so on and so forth. So with Jack, for example, it might be just 200 kilobytes. So what's going on here is that you're only loading what is needed at each particular point. The source of Jack's page.
The one with just blah.
Oh, yep, sure. So this is that here. So this is just Dreamweaver. This, all the great stuff is just the templates, you know, protecting parts that you can't.
So in a Dreamweaver template, you could have multiple editable regions.
Absolutely. So that's. So here we check in. This is how you check in an editable region, so editable area tag. Just call it contents 04. Okay. And then when we save that and we go to our page, scroll down and, oh, sorry, I need to go to the new page. Index, new page. So we've got here, new editable area, publish content, content ID, content 04. So we click here, and then you've got, and you're off and running, just the same idea with that as shown before. And you can do that as many times as you like.
In different parts of the page, like if you want to give Jack the ability to change that top banner image, for example.
Yep. Right now, well, yeah, what you'll do then is you'd take that out and you could just do the whole thing through the CMS and you just basically through TinyMC you'd insert that as an image. Obviously I haven't set this page up to do that, but yeah, that would be the idea. So yeah, you can do it anywhere, do it as long as you want. If I put in a new editable area and called it the same name, it would just produce the same content, but that's only on the same page. So pages are that you can have. Do you get what I'm saying? Like you only have to think about one page at a time. So if you had two tags, two content areas called the same thing on different pages, then they'll be different things. But if they've got the same tag on the same page, they'll be the same content, which is just logical. Right. 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 So I've done all that. Okay, now the other nice thing about this is when you're developing through Dreamweaver or whatever your choice is, you've got central resources. So you've got, if you go underscore images, it will take you to the central images. So right now, it's just forbidden. It's just a directory of images, so central images. Underscore scripts is the same, underscore styles is the same, and so any website within the framework can access central images, scripts, or styles simply by just going underscore, rah, 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 rah. And what I'd like to see developing here for images, scripts, and styles are kind of wiki interfaces where you can go in and see what JavaScripts people have been developing, and all you need to do is just take out the address, you know, underscore scripts, so and so forth, and pop it in, and you're right to go. And the other nice thing about that is, what's really nice about the images is that forms a platform for social networking, because what you have, for example, is underscore images / students / university username, and then that one address, you can put it anywhere. And then you just change the image once and it changes everywhere. So, yeah. Okay, so what's actually going on here when I press the button within Dreamweaver? Basically, it's just wrapping this PHP code around a privilege. So basically, if this priv, then execute this code. Now, within the controller and model, it's exactly the same. You just initiate the class, the object, and then pull the same thing. If this tag, then code. So the nice thing about how the privilege tags and the controller logic work together is they allow for unique business logic to arise. Basically, and what I was thinking of doing is, because what you're going to end up having is a long list of tags within any section, and it'll get quite unmanageable. So just some syntax I'm going to be doing for myself, but you can create your own, is I was thinking of doing something like, if you create a tag, you know, word one, and then dash word two. If there's a dash, that will interpret this as, say, a set. So then, if I do 1, 3, then it will display these. So because instead of having this big long list, you'll just have a fold down list, and you'll just have one. You click on that, and then you have 2, 3, 4. And then the other syntax thing I was thinking of putting in is conditions. So if there's like a colon, then anything after that will be a condition which relates to the tag. But all of that only makes sense in relation to my own business logic. So if you're doing your own application, you create your own syntax and your own business logic, and you're off and running. Okay, so we've gone through the content. Sorry for the stuff up. There's always got to be one in every presentation. Then we've gone through the branch, which is the HTML. Now we're onto the trunk, which is the business logic of any application. So in the branch, in the HTML level, you had folders. So all of this is just Dreamweaver stuff that we're mucking around with just to see if it all works. So you've got htdocs, which is just images, scripts, styles, whatever you want. And you just link to those locally, just like you would normally importing images and previewing. And as you see, it's just seamless FTP upload. So all of that works as it always has for those developers. Then within scripts is where all your PHTML scripts, PHTML it's just an extension. We can change it to anything, and for your individual application, you can change it to anything. It's just the default, so I run with that. It just stands for PHP HTML. And then in here, you've just got your file. So each file here is a page. Each folder is a section. So, for example, if I want to go to profiles, search, then within the URL, I would go to profiles, which is the folder, and search, which is the page. And then that takes me to the search page of the profile section. So that's the kind of the basic structure. Again, convention over hard coding. This is just the default. If you don't like it, go and make your own structure. that's kind of people that will stop at the HTML level, that's all you need to know. So that's what I should be saying throughout. People that stop at the CMS level, that interface is all you need to know. You don't even need to know anything about tags or the ACL or all of that. All of that kind of stuff and this syntax are for the one step along, which is your webmasters or, you know, whoever. And so it's always kind of making it easier, as easy as possible for everyone. So HTML editors and CMS, you know, we've stopped now and on to the next level, which is your PHP developers. And this is where the controller level comes in, so the separation between view and control. So for the HTML, just think about folders and pages. For those people that are coming along further, have to let go of that and think of controllers and actions. Everything's really working in terms of modules, controllers, and actions. That's the three things that the framework works around. So an action relates to a page, and a controller relates to a folder. So within your controller folder, so just say you've got the folder called index, then you'd have a class called index controller, which extends the Zen controller. And then within that class, you have the function indexAction, which relates to the individual page. So all controller logic or business logic for the index page happens within this function. So it's all neatly contained in there. Then you have another page, you have another function, you have another section, you have another controller, so on and so forth. So it seems kind of like, this seems really complicated and weird, why would you go to this extent? But once you actually get into a big application, you really start to appreciate how much it keeps you on track and makes things tidy. Okay, so within the controller, so this is just a basic example. Just say we wanted to produce wanted to echo out the hello world on the index page of the index controller. You just, you know, message equals hello world. It's just your standard kind of procedural coding in here. And then the next step along, then if you wanted to pull that out in your view, which is your HTML page, you've just got just echoing this message. So back here we had this view message equals hello world. So anything you put in here. So this is just part of the Zen controller action class. View is saying that anything you put here will be available in the view level. So you go through like that. Now I'm just sticking with this because, you know, it gets the job done. You can integrate Smarty. There's all sorts of templating systems if you want a different way of interacting between the controller and view levels. It's really hot in here. Hey, is there any way to get the windows more open? Or? Right. Don't want you all roasting on me. So then this is within the view, then you just pull out this message. So that's the basic idea. Now, moving into object-oriented programming, what you would do then is, for example, this here is calling the Zend library. Now, this is a real beauty of the framework. If you go through and read the Zend manuals, you'll see all these includes everywhere. I've gotten rid of all of that. You only need one include in the whole place, and that's down in the root, so you won't even need to know about that. Basically, And this is where it's really exciting. Just say, I've got my application, and I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's just work through this first, and then we'll get you up to speed. Okay, so class index controller extends Zen controller action. So this is that there in itself is drawing the class from the Zen library, and then this is just extending from the Zen library, and you do everything inside there. So the next step is to create your own library. So, for example, instead of the Hello World, you just create your own class. So basically, you've got your own folder, zoo. So I'm saying this is zoology. And then in there, you've got your class message.php. In there, you call it zoo message is your class. And then the function is say hi, return hello world. And what you do then is when you're coming back here, you initiate your object from your library, and you then pull out your variable through the class. So this is working off your central library, which, you know, is just the object-oriented way of doing things and makes a lot of sense just as an individual developer. But as you can see here, we're pulling from the Zen library. Now, this is the beautiful part about it, is that what we'll have then is a collection of libraries. You've got the health sciences kind of official library. You've got the Zen library. You can also have the zoology library, the dentistry library, the pharmacy library, the Joe Blow library, so on and so forth. And all you need to do, and seriously, all I need to do is make you a folder and everything else is done. You do all your classes inside there and just say Jack has his class over here. He's got a library. It's a folder. You know, this is his folder in there. He's got all his classes.
Change pens.
Thanks for the advice. How's that one? Okay, so this is Jack's library. It's his folder in here. There's a series of classes. So let's say he's got another folder called, I don't know, give me an idea. What does Jack want to do? He wants to... any ideas? What does Jack want to do?
Database.
Okay, so Jack, and we'll call it model. We'll call it model because then you deal with all your database stuff through model. Okay, so he's got model here and then another directory. And what does he want to do with the database?
Run a stored procedure.
Okay, so then he's got stored, stored.php. Okay. Now, for Jack to call that anywhere within his own application, all he has to do is write Jack_model_stored, and he's off and running. So you initiate an object, call it store, equals Jack model stored, and God, that's messy. You get the idea though, right? The name contains all the logic to organize and locate any class anywhere. So it's not just his application, it's someone else's application. If I want to use Jack's model stored in my application, I do exactly the same thing. So we don't have to worry about all that organization and stuff. That's the really exciting bit. I mean, that's going to... Yep, so that's where the community development comes in. So this is just an example here how on one page you could be drawing from a whole collection of libraries. So the next question is, how do you manage all of this? And this is where a proper workflow management comes in. I'll jump back to that one, but this is an example of automatically generated API documentation. This is coming from the Zen library. All of this is automatically generated. And as you can see, you can go through here. These are all ZenDB, so you know we had underscore model. You can have just the same. So you've got like Zen feed. You go through here. It shows you to-do list. You can go through here and see where they're up to. Obviously, they need to put in information while they're coding to bring out that extra information. But even if they don't do that, you're going to see where a particular thing sits and where it relates to everything else. So that's I think that's a really good resource to orientate yourself with. Okay, what are other people doing, and where does it fit in, and what else? What does it depend on, and what can you draw from, and that kind of thing. That's right. You don't even have to worry about any of that. All you got to do is do your own thing. That's that answer.
If you've built some class libraries or some functionality to access some in-house databases and you don't want other people to access
them, how you go about that is you create a private path. So the path that this is all running off is the default path, which is to the public central libraries. Just in your root, you create your own path. I can do it in one line. You've got a complete private library. No one can get access to it. Fire any of those questions. I've been thinking through this for a while. What if that? What if this? So yeah.
Otago classes would get added to the global Zen library.
No. No, this is just an example. So this is PHP Documenter. That's really fuzzy. Hey, should I... That's better. Sorry. You can actually see what I'm talking about. Wow. You're awake now. So what this is... Yeah, that's right. It's basically, it's just PHP Documenter, which is just, it just runs off a library of code. It doesn't even have to be in this structure. It's any, you know, any object-oriented structure is going to generate the documentation for you. So then, and again, it's this kind of, maybe we could work out an opt-in, opt-out scenario, like who wants their documentation publicized and who doesn't. All of these are workflow management questions.
This really does take off as you hope it will.
Yeah.
As a group of developers, campus-wide, we need to be very, from the beginning, clear about what...
Absolutely. Absolutely, and that's the next step, is to get a core group of people together and get the conventions going. So, and this is what I really tried to drum in yesterday, was convention over hard coding. The framework allows for a lot of flexibility, but if we really want to maximize this, if you don't want the garden just to be complicated, but you also want it to be productive, we've got to bring in management, we've got to bring in conventions. If someone doesn't want to do their own thing, cool, go for it, do your own thing. But you know... then, you know, don't kind of come crying to us when you're in a confused mess. Okay. Really enjoy the questions. I think that's how this will be most interesting. So just fire them out as we go. Okay, and then the next step is the manual. So this is the more verbose explanation of each class. I'm just using Zen Framework because obviously they're the leaders in all of this, and maybe we can have some equivalent of that, and that would be good where we could get a core group together to... I'm thinking of like hsweb.otago.ac.nz to get this, you know, as a first place of orientation where you come and get familiar with all of this. And through here, literally, as you can see, it's just Zend ACL, so on and so forth. It's that one format. Once you understand the principle, the rest is details. You just see the same thing happening everywhere. So that's kind of how you manage the enormous flexibility of the system, and that's where the self-management comes in, because, you know, with any self-organizing system, there's an enormous... That's the biggest risk, is that it's going to get so complicated and so overwhelming that it can't be managed. Okay, and just an example of a mature library, which is Zend. This is how simple it is to do some things, and this is what I was talking about, trying to get those feeds together if I didn't get the migraine last night. One line, we've got an object full of all the feed information. You just pull out what you want. And that, you know, bang. XML RPC, literally this is all you need to do to export any class. Because of the whole system, you just plug it in there. Any class has suddenly become, you know, broadcasted through a server. Filters, filter inputs, logging system, REST, same as, you know, it's broadcasting. Johnson, very easy. Amazon... Flickr, StrikeIron, Yahoo, Calendar. These are, I try to limit myself. There's just so much to choose from. Now, and as you can see, each of these is kind of brought, you know, as simple as possible, but no simpler. Now, all of these examples are from the official kind of core library, which has been unit tested, you know, gone through rigor and all the rest. In addition to this, you've got your incubator classes, which is like much larger, but what the incubator class is one step before the official class. So it's like really good idea, really, really cool, almost there, but just a few more tests to go through. And a lot of people use incubator classes, but they're a little bit more a little bit less stable, much larger and much more to choose from. In addition to that, you've got the proposed classes, which is your wiki. So you've got an enormous amount of choice here. All basically, we'd have to have some kind of community management as to what we load in to be available in libraries. But given that, you've literally just got to know the name. Anywhere within the framework, anywhere with any application, you just got to know the name and then, you know, you initiate the object and obviously know how it works and stuff like that. But I think that's such a beauty. I mean, that just saves so much bloody time. Okay, so going through the, going back to the tree analogy, the content is what the user sees at the end. The branch is the view level, so this is the views. So these are just directories, the views here. Got htdocs and scripts, and so I just took you through that before. Again, convention over hard coding, there's no reason it has to be this way, it's just what I've gone for. Then you've got your controllers, and this is your application, and then technology is our example, and in here you've got your bootstrap, which is what's really, everything gets filtered through your bootstrap. So these, you can completely lock these down. So there's actually no access through the server to these. It's all being served up through the bootstrap. And, yeah. So then you fill that out, and in our example, you know, you've got the index controller. So the index controller is here within the controllers. That parallels to the index folder. And then within the index controller, you've got actions. The actions relate to the pages, and you just repeat that principle throughout. So that's the views and controllers, how they relate to each other. So let's just take you through and show you some of the code. So we've got... So now, as you can see here, this is just the technology. So what I would do is people that want to come on board, I'd give them a variety of FTP levels of access. So I'd give, you know, depending on what you want, if you want a branch, I'd give you the FTP access to this level. If you want a trunk, I'll give you FTP access to this level. If you want the root, the whole application, I'll give you access to that level. And if you have control of the bootstrap, you've got complete control of your application. That's where you can make your private paths to your private libraries. And if you've got access to this, you can completely cut off from any of the major resources that we might provide centrally or mix and match, what have you. And then as a separate FTP, I'd give you access to a central library. Okay, so I'll just take you to the framework. This is the full thing. Now, everything with underscores is kind of the backbone of the framework. I've put them all here because it's easy to demonstrate. Once we actually get going, I'll chuck all of these in a CGI directory and just have the sites in your web root. So we'll go to technology and we'll open up the index. So as you can see here, I'll take this line out because I'm going to have just a central CMS database, so that won't be there, and that won't be there. So when you start, all you have is basically two lines. One is, and this is the only include, that's just including from a general bootstrap, which I've configured. So that's what makes it easy for every to make kind of a system-wide configuration. If you want to drop that, it's you just drop that line and you create your own controller. Okay, now yeah. So what I'll do is, I'll just run through these last few slides, and then I'll just let you guys kind of guide us as what you want to know about, because there's just so much in this thing. I could ramble on about something and completely bore you.
Where are you at with the security of the hosting?
Of the server or of the servo. We're going to 444. We had a meeting 2 days ago with Mark Borey. And so we're going to 444. We're upgrading. They use Xservs there, so we're going to go to 10.5. So security in the framework. It's funny you ask that. Just a few points about this. Sorry for people that have already heard this before. Zen's the company behind PHP, so if there's any vulnerabilities in the language, these guys are going to know about it. A lot of most common PHP threats have covered within the methods. Thus, the coding is easier and safer if you use those methods. They're helping you follow best practice. PHP it's got a bad rap, and for good reasons. But love it or hate it, it is a popular language, and it's out there. And I imagine quite a lot, if not the majority, of sites within the university probably already use it to one extent or another. No, or still, I think it's a pretty dominant language when it comes to the internet.
So did you choose it just because it is dominant? Did you look at anything else?
Like, yes, absolutely. Yeah, we went through. I mean, that's why the first month was all research going through this, and then I came across a developer who runs a full VPS company, virtual private networks. He manages servers throughout the world, and all interactions with the server through the framework itself. And so I went, wow, okay, if you can do that kind of stuff, and it's a professional company, it's like, okay, maybe there's something in this. So I looked at that and went for this. Also, I was employed as a central developer of health sciences, and part of the description was PHP. So I've gone with that. And the other thing is, a few of here I see also went to it. There was a AusCert security conference 2 weeks ago. We went to that. I was looking at PHP. I think it said in the last bug hunt there was like 44 vulnerabilities found, 8 of which are still prevalent now. All of those, though, are covered by the Suhosen patch. So as long as things are patched and best practices followed, I don't see the problem. Also, working with Otago ITS Security, so applying AusCert recommendations, patch and harden PHP, logging, etc., development workflow. And I think this is a really important part of security, is to actually take into mind the whole development workflow. So it's not just about technology and getting the perfect language and getting the perfect servers and stuff like that. If you have the perfect, most secure language and you've got a bad workflow or someone that doesn't really understand how things are going on, you're going to have security holes. So I think that's a really important bit that's often missed in all of this, is to try to...
I asked about that. You said FTP. Were you serious that it's just ordinary FTP, or is it secure FTP?
Oh, yeah, sure. And this is where I'd like to take advice on all of that. Like, if you've got any tips to make it more secure, this is why we met with Mark Borey 2 days ago. I'm not saying I know everything. So let's do it together. For their own application, yes, but only their own application. So they can completely stuff up their own application, but yeah. And this is also, if we go back to the development workflow, this is where the testing server comes in. So you've got your development server, and you've got this full testing phase. And so you go through here, and this is where Mark's agreed to audit, and we might even get a commercial company to come in and regularly do audits and test all of that stuff out, and just to make sure. Threats are dynamic, so the protection needs to be dynamic. There's no kind of, oh, we've done it right, now we can forget about it. You need some kind of dynamic process to guard against dynamic threats, which is this. So you've just got your development server, proposal goes up, gets tested, and if it passes, it goes on to the production. If it doesn't, it goes back with the revision notes to the community and loops back through. Now, this is a very complicated diagram from the Zen manual. The ACL check, so what this is happening is when a request is made on the framework, it comes through here. This is the process that happens before a response comes out. Now, the server side for an application happens in the dispatch. The ACL check happens in the pre-dispatch. So these are, they're called plugins. So it's actually hooking on to, you know, a part in the request process. So if you get denied at the ACL, any of your controller language doesn't even get touched or looked at or processed. So it's a nice security feature there. Croydon at the last seminar asked, you know, what other stuff can I do other than websites? This is where the request object comes in. So the default request object is Zen controller request HTTP. And basically what that does, so the request is handling how you interact with the framework. So the default is through HTTP. So you've got, say, domain.com/, and then it's just, module, controller, action. So, but this, I mean, that's anything, you know, any words in there. And then what the HTTP request object does is decomposes that URL into the appropriate module controller request action, and then you're off and running, working through the MVC layers. The other environments you can work with is CLI, command line, so you can have a command line request object you're still using the MVC layers. Another example would be PHP GTK, so you could do, that's like, you might be familiar with GIMP, that's through GTK, and you can use, and PHP GTK is just a binder for that. So that's just two other examples of different environments that the framework can work within. So, but we'll just stick with HTTP for now. Okay, so how the actual ACL is working is the ACL interface that I demonstrated at the front. You enter the rules. This goes, basically, you've got a database full of ACL rules. When you change any rule, it builds and caches this in an object. And then the ACL object is called by the ACL plugin, which was happening at the pre-dispatch section in the last diagram, and that controls access to a resource. Now, obvious question here is, with the tiered self-organization, at the beginning of this, I said that I have to give Jill the right to be a webmaster before Jill can, so on and so forth. So am I, the suspicious people in the audience, I'm saying, is he setting himself up to be like a super administrator of this one big system? No, and the reason for this is you can build your own ACL objects. So this is where I'm kind of talking about water flowing. You can have a different system working through all the same resources and the same ACL and yet be a completely different system. So right now, I'm the system administrator, which is kind of the top of the flow and everything flows down from here. But if you want to do your own system within it, you just cache your own ACL object and pull it in and you're right to go. Once those guys that get developing into this, you kind of get a feel for this, that whole how systems can be the same and yet separate. And that's just the request object. Yep, absolutely. It's very simple to do, and Zend already offers you many shortcuts for doing that. There's a whole range. I showed yesterday that, you know, that whole idea of the service is coming in, the service is coming out. Sorry, that showed last week. Yeah, there's a whole range, REST and XML RPC and different ways of doing that. And then basically any application, any interface, anything anywhere that can digest, you know, serialize XML objects or whatever can run with that and go with it. And that's the nice thing about this, because there's frameworks popping up all over the place. There's frameworks in other languages. And this will take full advantage of that. As long as the other system is well designed, they can leverage off each other.
But the kind of practical example of that might be something like a purchase request that needs to be signed by a manager. So the manager goes in, authenticates himself through that, creates the request. It needs to be physically signed. The request goes into the database ready to go, but it also generates a PDF that's pre-filled. Only from that they can then sign and pay it in.
Mm.
So you've got the signature and you've got the stuff in the database without having to and then all the workflow just means, oh, right, I've got that.
Now, another nice thing about this is stored procedures. So the lovely things within databases. And so say you've got MySQL and you've got all your stored procedures in there, and then you just go and request the specific procedure. That's great, but what if you want to do store procedures for a whole range of databases? What if you find out that there's kind of common database operations that you want to do across the division that uses various databases? That's where you could take advantage of the model level within the framework and use ZenDB table relational maps. And so you use the relational maps to create, to ease, you know, complicated operations on databases, and then just call, you know, the simple name. And so what that means is that you're creating stored procedures just one level up, which means they can be pulled down and be utilized with other databases in addition to your normal stored procedures within a database. And that's the nice idea about all of this, is it's in addition to. There's kind of, it's not really many compromises. It's all like, if you want to do it your own way, do it your own way. Yeah, but if you want to take advantage of collaborative effort, you know, write in the class name and you're right to go. Yeah.
Yep. Different language.
Yep.
So is all right.
Well, what you would do then?
The web application is going to use the framework.
Yep.
So, but I design it with different language.
Yep.
So how can I connect to this to your brain?
It would be through web services.
Web services.
Yeah.
So the web services are on HTTP is the only way to do that. So I mean, if I develop a web application.
Yep.
So
yeah, well, for example, you could do like an XML RPC export, and all you need to do there is, I had an example there, you just basically you just write your line, write the name of your class in, that exports out the XML, and that can be sucked in by another framework in another language or another application. It's about RIA, rich internet technology, so it's about web technology. So one way or another, it's about connecting to a server and getting stored code from that server and using it in all different ways. Does that kind of... That's... Yeah. Yeah, the really exciting stuff is Flex and Adobe Air, and that's what I was actually thinking. I've been very tempted to actually pull in Flex for the view level with the applets, because you'd have much more stability across the browsers, but it draws in another layer of complexity, and as it is, you're drawing upon quite common skills. Most web developers know JavaScript and Ajax and all of that kind of stuff, and so you're using that. But yeah, Flex is great, and it's got its own database server to handle all the database transactions between a server and a web page. And what's, I was thinking about this, the nice thing about the relationship between controllers, between actions and pages, or actions and views, is that it doesn't have to be one-to-one. You can have one action can go to several different views. So you put in the correct controller logic, and maybe you have a setting in the user home where it says, I want to use the Flash interface to the applet. So you click there and it comes up as Flash. All the functionality is the same. None of the business logic has changed, but you've just got a different interface. So that kind of branching out in options is quite exciting. Yeah.